towards their seat. The title of the message tonight is Laying Aside Every Weight. If you can turn to Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. It says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin." So in Hebrews chapter 12, it starts with wherefore. And in whenever we find wherefore, we want to find out what it's there for. So we're not going to tonight, but if we turn to Hebrews chapter 11, it goes over the heroes of the faith, as we call them. It goes through Noah and Enoch and Abraham and Sarah and a great deal others, and how they, through faith, did what God had them do. So in light of that, and because of their testimonies, we can know that we can do what God wants us to do because of their testimonies and because of his word. So if we turn to 2 Samuel chapter 19, 2 Samuel chapter 19, and again the sermon title is Laying Aside Every Weight. So as we're reading through here, keep that in mind, Laying Aside Every Weight. Second Samuel 19. Right about now, I'm wishing I marked it. All right, and just kind of give you an idea. We're picking the story up right in the middle. So this is obviously in the Old Testament. And David, at this time, was king. He's been king for a while. And his son Absalom had just led a revolt against him to take the kingdom from his father. So David had to flee with his servants, those that were loyal to him. He had to flee Jerusalem. They crossed over the Jordan River, and then Absalom, his son, had gathered together his army to pursue them. And Absalom put this man named Amasa as the captain of the army. There's another man named Joab, who's been the captain of the army for David for quite some time. But Joab stayed with David. This man, Amasa, stayed behind and followed Absalom. So they crossed over the Jordan River. Absalom has his army chasing David with his servants, and there was a battle. Before the battle, David numbered his men. He put captains over them, and he charged the captains. So he made captains over the thousands, captains over the hundreds for better control, and he charged them in front of all the men that when they came across his son Absalom, they weren't to hurt him. So he didn't just tell the captains, he told them in front of everyone that when they come across his son, to deal kindly with him, basically not to hurt him. So during the battle, Joab heard from one of the men that Absalom was caught in a tree. And he questioned the man, "Why didn't you kill him? If you had killed him, you would have gotten a reward." And the man told him, "No, that's not what would happen, because you and me both heard David. He said, don't touch him. If I would have killed him, you yourself would have turned against me." So Joab said, "Oh, I don't have time to sit here and talk with you. Where is he?" So he takes his armor bearers and went and he killed Absalom. Now it says he was caught in a tree. And it says he was riding a donkey, and his hair got caught in a tree. I've only gone horseback riding a few times, but I have rode a horse, which is a little bit taller, but I've ridden a horse through the woods running. They don't care about you. All they care about is themselves. So they will run as close to the trunks of the trees as they want, and then they'll just duck, and they don't care about you. So you got to kind of look out. But Absalom says he had long hair, and as he was running through the woods on the donkey, he got caught in between heaven and earth. So basically, his hair's, he's stuck in the middle of the air. Donkey took off, and he's defenseless. So Joab went, and he thrust three darts into his heart. And then his armor bearers finished him off. So they killed him in direct violation of what David had told them to do. So in that same battle, 20,000 men of Israel were killed. David's men obviously prevailed because God was with David. So in response to Absalom being killed, the people of Israel no longer had a leader because Absalom had just led a revolt. And Absalom had spent the last few decades, I believe, turning the hearts of the Israelites to him, away from his father David. So what he was doing was, when anybody came to the when anybody came to David for a judgment or anything, he'd let them go up, and then when they were leaving, he would ask them, "Oh, what is there anything else we can do for you?" And then he would kiss them and he would greet them and basically try to steal their heart, and he'd say, "Oh, hey, David didn't help you. Oh, I'm so sorry. Is there anything I can do for you? Cuz I want to help you, but David doesn't." So he had just spent years doing that, and because of some other circumstances, he's already bitter at his father. So he led this revolt. Israel went with him. David had to flee, went over the Jordan River. Absalom took the armies of Israel, pursued after him, and then he was killed. So Joab, again, he was a captain of the host, captain of the host of the armies of Israel. He stayed with David and was loyal to David. When he went with David, David had him as one of the captains in charge of the army that David had. And Amasa is the name of this other man. He was put in charge of the Israeli army, which was still Absalom. They were following Absalom. So once Absalom was killed, they had no leader. So David sent word to Judah. Well, first, the people of Israel. So there's 12 tribes. Okay, David is from the tribe of Judah, and Israel is comprised of 12 tribes. So all the people of Israel were arguing about bringing David back as king. So they just kicked him out, followed his son, and now that the son's dead, they want him back. So all the people of Israel, and David finds out by a messenger that that's happening. So he sends a messenger to Judah, his own tribe, and basically says, "Why weren't you the first one to try to bring me back? You're bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. You're my family. Why weren't you the first one to try to bring me back?" And he also sent word to Amasa, who was from his same tribe, telling him that if Judah brings him back as king, Amasa will take the place of Joab as being the captain of the host of the armies. So their response is Judah sent word to David asking him to come back as their king. And the tribe of Judah then met him and escorted him over the Jordan River and back home to Jerusalem. So that's where we're going to pick up here in chapter 19 and verse number 41. And given the political climate there, I think we have it pretty good right now, as much as we complain about our politics. But if we turn to 2 Samuel chapter 19, verse number 41. So Judah had just asked David to come back. They met him on the other side of Jordan. They escorted him over Jordan and back to Jerusalem. In verse number 41, this caused strife between the tribes of Israel and Judah. So it says, "And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said unto the king, 'Why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away?'" Now, wait a minute. Isn't this the same king they were just trying to kill? "Why have the men of Judah stolen thee away and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over Jordan. And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is near of kin to us. Wherefore then be ye angry for this matter? Have we eaten at all of the king's cost, or hath he given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 parts in the king, and we have also more right in David than ye. Why then do ye despise us, that our advice should not be first had in bringing back our king? And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. So again, the Israelites, they're talking about bringing David back as king because Absalom has just been killed. And David turns to Judah and says, you know what? You're my family. Why aren't you the first people to try to bring me back? And they say, you know what? That kind of puts a little bit of pressure on them to prove that they need to prove, hey, we do want you back, David. So they meet him. They send messengers to him that they want him back, and then they meet him the other side of Jordan, conduct him or escort him over Jordan to Jerusalem. And now the other tribes of Israel are angry because they did it without their consent. So they're angry, and there it says the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. So the men of Judah are saying, hey, the king didn't pay us anything to go help him bring him over here. It's up to him. It's his choice. So why are you angry with us? And chapter 20, verse 1, it says, and there happened to be there a man of Belial. Okay, when it says in the Old Testament, a man of Belial, it's a man of the devil, or a man of the baser sort. Okay, and there happened to be there a man of Belial whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew a trumpet and said, we have no part in David, neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel. So every man of Israel went up from after David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah clave unto their king from Jordan even to Jerusalem. So their political climate is already in trouble. And here we already have another split, another revolt starting with this man named Sheba. Verse number 3, and David came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took the 10 women, his concubines, whom he had left to keep the house, put them in ward, and fed them, but went not in unto them. So they were shut up unto the day of their death, living in widowhood. In verse number 4, then said the king to Amasa, assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present. So Amasa, again, is the new captain of the armies, which would be just Judah now, and anybody that's going to follow David, but his servants and his mighty men. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him. So he gave him 3 days. 3 days passed, and he hadn't got it done yet. He hadn't arrived back. Verse number 6, and David said to Abishai, now shall Sheba the son of Bichri do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities and escape us. And there went out after him Joab's men and the Cherethites and the Pelethites and all the mighty men. And they went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba the son of Bichri. So David sees the importance of nipping this in the bud, stopping the second revolt before it can get momentum again. So he gives 3 days to Amasa to go out to Judah, gather all the men of the armies, and bring them back. And in 3 days, he hasn't come back yet. So he tells Abishai, take thou thy lord's servants and pursue after him. So this is a different group. So he sent Amasa after the men of Judah. Okay, he already had his servants and his mighty men with him. So he says, you know what? I guess we don't need a bigger army. We just need to go get him. So take the servants, and then with the servants, Joab's men, Cherethites, Pelethites, and all the mighty men, they all went out. So they're on their way to get Sheba. Verse number 8, when they were at the great stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa went before them, and Joab's garment that he had put on was girded unto him, and upon it a girdle with a sword fastened upon his loins in the sheath thereof. And as he went forth, it fell out. And Joab said to Amasa, Art thou in health, my brother? And Joab took Amasa by the beard with the right hand to kiss him, but Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand. So as he was going, it looked like the sword just fell out of the sheath. It fell off of him. So he grabbed it. So he didn't take any thought about the sword that was in his hand when they were meeting up. So he smote him therewith in the fifth rib and shed out his bowels to the ground and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri, and one of Joab's men stood by him and said, He that favoreth Joab, and he that is for David, let him go after Joab. And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him, when he saw that everyone that came by him stood still. When he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. And he went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel and to Beth Maacha and all the Berites, and they were gathered together and went also after him. And they came and besieged him in Abel of Beth Maacha, and they cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in the trench. And all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. Then cried a wise woman out of the city, Hear, hear, say, I pray you, unto Joab. Come here, come near hither, that I may speak with thee. And when he was come near unto her, the woman said, Art thou Joab? And he answered, I am he. Then she said unto him, Hear the words of thine handmaid. And he answered, I do hear. Then she spake, saying, They were wont to speak in old time, saying, They shall surely ask counsel at Abel. And so they ended the matter. In other words, she's saying, the city of Abel, the city there, is a well-known city. It was once a great city in Israel, is what she's saying. Verse number 19, I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of the Lord? So she says, why are you coming against us? What do you need? What's the problem? We're Israelites just like you're Israelites. We don't need to fight. I want peace. What's the problem? Verse number 20, And Joab answered and said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba the son of Bichri by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city. And the woman said unto Joab, Behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall. Then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and cast it out to Joab. And he blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. And Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king. All right, you may be thinking now, what in the world does this medieval battle have to do with us today? But we're going to take a closer look at it. If you go back to verse number 9, And Joab said to Amasa, Art thou in health, my brother? And Joab took Amasa by the beard with the right hand to kiss him. But Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand. So he smote him therewith in the fifth rib and shed out his bowels to the ground and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. And one of Joab's men stood by him and said, He that favoreth Joab, and he that is for David, let him go after Joab. So David makes Amasa the captain of the host in place of Joab. He sends Amasa out, go gather an army together, and then go after Sheba. He takes too long, so David then sends Abishai, and Joab goes with Abishai, and then Joab murders Amasa in the highway in front of the men. But he not only does that, he leaves, it says, he leaves him, and Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. He leaves him in the middle of the highway, wallowing or rolling around in blood. So he's trying to make a statement, okay? He's trying to make sure everyone knows what he just did. He just asserted control over the armies again. He wanted everybody to know that he was in charge, Amasa wasn't. So Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway, so he's rolling around in his blood in the middle of the highway that the entire army has to go past. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him when he saw that everyone that came by him stood still. So Joab's plan wasn't working. He wanted to get the army going faster. He wanted them to know he was in charge, follow him. But everyone that came, they stopped and stood still. They couldn't believe what just happened. Now, think about what everything that already happened, all the betrayals and all the killing. 20,000 of the Israelites had already been killed. And now, just when they think there's almost peace, they just have one person to go after, Sheba. Now Joab has killed Amasa, the new captain. So try to imagine the army seeing their new captain killed on the ground, rolling around in his blood. And one of Joab's men is there saying, if you're for David, if you're for Joab, keep going. He's that way. They came and they stood still. Try to think what they were thinking. Okay, what's David think about this? Maybe they're thinking, what would David do? What's he going to do when he finds out what happened? Is David okay with this? Are we supposed to follow Joab? Are we supposed to go back to David and find out what he wants us to do? Okay, regardless of what they were thinking, it caused them to stop and to stand still. Caused them to lose focus. It caused them to get distracted from their task. What was their task? Their task was to kill Sheba and stop another revolt. Because if Sheba was allowed to gather fenced cities, if Sheba was allowed to continue, there could have been another slaughter of 20,000 men or more. So they needed to stop. It was a very important task that they had, but this situation, Amasa sitting wallowing in blood in the middle of the highway, was stopping them, was distracting them, and was causing them to lose focus. Verse number 13, when he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. So in verse number 12, it says, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him when he saw that everyone that came by him stood still. And when he was covered up and in the field, everyone went by and they stayed on focus. So let's try to bring into perspective and relate to our church or our personal lives. So as a church, we've gone through some difficult times together. We know as a church family firsthand about wolves coming in and not sparing the flock. Like Acts chapter 20, verse number 29 says, for I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. We as a church, we know firsthand about that. Now, as individuals, we'll go through difficult times as well. We live in a world that's cursed by sin. In John 16, verse 33, it says, these things have I spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. So as long as we're in the world, we will have trials. We will have difficulties. Whether the struggles are health or an illness, whether they're a betrayal of a friend or a family member, whether it's a financial crisis, whether it's a strife in a marriage or a family relationship, whether it's your family members or close friends making bad decisions, whether it's the effects of our bad decisions, whatever it may be, we are going to go through difficult times. We are going to have trials in this life. Regardless of the difficulty, though, God has promised that he won't give us more than we can handle. If we turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, hold your place in 2 Samuel, but 1 Corinthians chapter 10. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. So a temptation can be a trial, it can be a difficulty, it can be a temptation to sin, it could be an illness, it could be, like we talked about earlier, it could be a financial crisis, it could be a family member, it could be a betrayal. Whatever it is, it can be a temptation, but it says there is no temptation, trial, okay? We can say trial, there's no trial taking you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that we may be able to bear it. So he won't give us more than we can handle, okay? But he will give us just enough to where we need him to handle it. He won't give us too much, but he will give us enough that we need him. So just like with physical wounds, all wounds take time to heal. But we must turn them over to God. Only he can heal them with his grace and cover them with time. Just like Amasa, when he was taken out in the field, away from the highway and covered with a cloth to allow them to stay on focus and keep going. Only when we turn our difficulties, our trials, our burdens over to God, can he heal any wounds that we have with his grace. And he can cover them with time. It takes time to heal from some things. Any physical wound, it takes time to heal. And some trials in our life, it takes time to heal. And only when we turn them over to God does that time start ticking. We're not going to heal unless we can turn it over to God. Both as a church and individuals, we need to look at our lives and decipher any weights that we may be carrying around with us. So this was a weight, okay? This was a trial. This was a burden. This was something that was stopping the men of Israel, the men of Judah, from going after the goal that they were, the task that they were supposed to be doing, okay? So we need to take inventory of our lives. As a church, we need to take inventory of our lives individually and see if there's any weights, if there's anything we have that's stopping us from moving forward and doing what God would have us to do. We need to allow God to heal our wounds, whatever they may be. And if you turn to 1 Peter chapter 5, 1 Peter chapter 5. Verse number 7, 1 Peter 5, 7, it says, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. He cares for us. He wants to take those burdens. He wants to take those trials, and he wants to heal those wounds. We need to turn it over to him, though. Turn to Psalms 55, Psalms in the Old Testament, chapter 55, verse number 22. Psalms 55, verse number 22, cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. We need to cast those burdens, cast those weights to God so that he can heal us. Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3, back in the New Testament again. Philippians chapter 3, verse number 13 and 14. says, "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press towards the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus." We need to not count ourselves to have apprehended. We haven't made it in the Christian life. We haven't made it to the finish line yet. If we're still alive, we're not at the finish line yet. We still can have weights. We can still be distracted. We can still lose focus on the tasks that God has for us. Okay? We need to forget those things which are behind. The way we can forget those things which are behind, those trials, those burdens, is by turning them over to God and letting Him, again, cover them with time. We won't heal if, just like they didn't go anywhere when Amasa was sitting wallowing in blood in the middle of the highway, it's right in front of them. It needed to be taken away from them. They needed to move him into the field and cover it with a cloth. Okay, we won't heal when we have it right in front of our face. Okay, we need to turn it over to God, and then we can start healing. God can heal us. So we must lay aside every weight and run with patience the race that is set before us. We need to keep our eyes fixed on God and His Word instead of our trials. And we can do that by turning those trials, those burdens, over to God. So Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13 and 14 says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil." So in closing, each one of us should take inventory of our own life. Is there any weight that we've been carrying around, knowingly or unknowingly? Is there a weight that we know that we've been carrying around? Or maybe it's just a weight that we haven't realized that we've been carrying it. Something that's stopping you or stopping me from doing what God would have us do. We as a church need to look at it together as well. Is there a weight that this church has been carrying around? And then we individually have to look in our lives and inventory it and find out, is there any weights? Is there anything, any trials, something that we're not willing to let go of that's stopping us from doing what God wants us to do?